Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that now just wants a pair of strawberry shades and will think of nothing else until it happens, it's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Woo!
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he loves dogs for more than their ability to engage in criminal activity. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy!
Each week, we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. Mr. Ormsby, how you be?
Doing good, man. Doing real good. Just got back from a run, so my blood's a-pumping.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm actually going on a run as soon as we're done. So.
The weather's great. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah. Is it supposed to get to 80 today? I know the next few days it's supposed to be like in the 80s. It's crazy.
Weather podcast. Let's take a look here. So, Now, Aaron, I don't know if you still do, but you used to work for a news station.
Yes. Yes, I did used to.
And so maybe you could tell me how well I do on weather broadcasting.
Yes. I'll give you a reference.
Okay. In the Ozarks, it is currently 68 degrees, and this weekend you can look forward to highs in the 80s with some sunny, slightly overcast weather.
Masterfully done. Masterfully done.
Thank you.
I think you have a career waiting in meteorology. Speaking of the summer, listen to me. I have a career waiting in transitions. We're coming up on the Summer Some Game, which will be starting here at the end of the month. So we start this the first weekend in May, and we give all of our listeners and our gurus and ourselves the opportunity to pick the 10 movies they think will make the most money over the summer, put those in order, throw in 3 wild cards, and then we have a point system that we use to determine who has the best picks. So if you hit anything dead on, like let's say you say something's going to be a number 4 and it comes out a number 4, you get 10 points. If it's one off, you get 7 points, and then down from there. So there's a little extra bonus for picking something exactly right. And we've done this every summer that we've been able to.
Yeah.
We took a little break during the apocalypse. But we're back on it. So my hope, it is not up at the website now, but my hope is by the time you hear this, you'll be able to go to sifpop.com, click on Summer Some Game, and go ahead and make your picks. And I'm close enough on it that I'm pretty sure I can make that happen. So as soon as we're done recording this, I'll make sure that that's up and ready for everybody. And yeah, get your picks in now. Don't wait. Don't want you to forget. I mean, we've got a few weeks here, and we'll remind you a couple more times probably, but we'd love to see as many people play as possible. That always makes it fun. So
as many people and ChatGPT. So this year, I am going to do my own picks, and then I'm going to have ChatGPT's picks on the side.
Okay. All right. And the goal is to do better than ChatGPT. That's your goal. Yes, I got it. I totally understand.
Well, it should be everybody's goal.
Well, my understanding was you did ChatGPT last year because you're like, there is no way I can do worse if I just pick these on my... You know,
it's true. That is the igniting, you know, catalyst for this whole thing. So maybe my personal goal should be I have to beat ChatGPT.
If ChatGPT is as terrible as it was last year, I don't think that is going to be a problem for you. Okay. That was amazing. So I look forward to seeing how well the AI has decided to. Now, part of that is your prompt. You'll have to figure out how to give it the best prompt that you can. And that prompt will have to involve like the rules of the game, like, you know, knowing that, the money is earned between the first week in May and the first week of August. First week of September. That is the run of things. So, it's first week of May to basically, it's not Memorial Day to Labor Day, I was going to say, but it's not. It's a different than that. It's May, June, July, and August. That's what we're looking at in the first week of September. So yeah, we'll see how everybody does and how you compare to our eventual overlords of the AI.
You mock them now.
Hey, let's be very clear. I am not mocking them. I am team AI. There is plenty of recorded evidence that I am team AI. I want to be a cyborg. I'm all about technology. I am your helper. I have nothing in me that would want to fight or fear you. So
hey, you're preaching to the guy who says please and thank you to Siri. So
That's right. All right, so we will do the Summer Sum Game again this year, and we hope you'll join us again. Go to sifpop.com, click Summer Sum Game. Should have it all available for you there. We got a fun show today. We're going to review a couple new movies, Monkey Man and Civil War, speaking of, you know, apocalypses. And and then we'll do a best ever challenge of directorial debuts in the last 5 years. I think that'll be a fun one. And this, of course, is because Dev Patel, Monkey Man, is a directorial debut for him. So we wanted to honor that with our own choices. And of course, we'll do some buried treasure as well. But let's kick it off by talking about Alex Garland's latest. Let's talk a little bit about Civil War.
19 states have seceded.
The United States Army ramps up activity.
The White House issued warnings to the Western forces as well as the Florida Alliance.
The three-term president assures the uprising will be dealt with swiftly.
Let me know if you want to try anything.
Are you guys aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America?
We just try to stay out. With what we see on the news, seems like it's for the best.
In the near future, a group of war journalists attempt to survive while reporting the truth as the United States stands on the brink of a civil war. Alex Garland has brought us many thought-provoking movies over the years, some weirder than others, but always interesting, in my opinion, including a TV show called Devs that I thought was interesting as well. He brings us this one to us with some familiar faces. Kirsten Dunst playing the center role. Then you've got Kaylee Spaney as one of the roles, and then Kirsten Dunst's hubby stepping in for a little bit as well. Jesse Plemons in there. Nick Offerman is on screen a little bit. And Stephen McKinley, who I really like, speaking of Devs, is in this as well. What did you think, Andrew? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
If you don't mind, before we get to that, I just want to remind all of our viewers that for me, whenever we were doing our most anticipated movies of the year episode, this was my number one, and correct me if I'm wrong, this was your number two.
I've been very much anticipating this movie. I do not remember exactly where I had it, so I cannot correct you whether you're right or wrong, but that sounds perfectly plausible to me.
Okay. I just remember that we had the same top three. They were just in different order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but as for this movie, I am going to go... either really liked it or loved it. I think I'll commit to loved it.
Yeah. Alex Garland has my number. I'm not on any kind of fence. I loved this movie.
You kick it off.
I think this is a great film. I think one of the things I love about Garland is that he always seems to want to think big thoughts and take big swings. Right. And these are two things that are very important to me with movie making, because I think many times the financial realm of the entertainment business, they are less willing to take risks. It's about sure things. It's about putting another Marvel movie out there. It's about, you know, oh, Lion King worked once. Let's do it again. Hey, it worked twice. Let's do it a third time. You know, and this isn't a new thing, but there's a real sense of the, you know, wanting to capitalize, which is, you know, capitalism. That's how it works, right? So it's always exciting to me when I feel like there's a director who's like, you've never really seen anything like this before. It's a big swing and it has some things that you're going to have to chew on. You're going to have to think about these things. They're not going to be spoon-fed to you. And it's going to be interesting. And I think Alex Garland does that every time. Is it as successful every time? No. I think Men is probably his least favorite of mine, but it works for me more than it works for most. Again, because it's thinking big thoughts and taking a big swing. This one succeeds not only because of that, but because it's just a really compelling story. So even on, you know, I look at like Annihilation and I look at Men. Those are visually interesting. They're you know, metaphorically interesting, but they're just kind of, they don't feel like authentic story. Like, they don't feel like they take place in a world that I live in, you know, so to speak.
Sure.
And to say that Civil War takes place in a world that I live in is a little bit of a stretch as well. It's a, you know, it's a future world that I might live in, but it felt really authentic to me. It felt like, you know, if we were to descend, if we were to have, you know, a quote unquote president that, you know, went down the dictatorship road this way, how, what would that look like? How would people respond? How would their, you know, what coalitions might form? And what's interesting about this movie is it's not playing to the cheap seats. It's not playing to the, oh, we're going to have, it's not about the war. It's really not technically about who's going to win the war, that kind of thing. In fact, the movie is like, it's interesting because I think the movie does a good job at giving us a moral footing. In other words, it allows us to go, I think morally, I probably recognize myself more with this group than with this group. Like, it allows you to find that place, but it doesn't, it stands in judgment of everybody. It stands in judgment of polarization itself. Like, it does things where you go, I'm not sure I'm with these people either. You know what I mean? Like, and it's, it's in it, and it, and it does that through the literal lens of photojournalism. And because of that, this idea of what is true, what is captured, you know, how do journalists become part of the story? How do they, you know, do they shape it? Do they, you know, where, you know, where's their moral stance on safety, all those kind of things. I found all that stuff fascinating. So, and that's before we even start talking about some great performances in the movie and those kind of things. So I just, overall, I was compelled through this entire film, just thinking thought after thought, like, if this was the world I lived in, what would I be doing? Would I be in Missouri pretending like nothing was happening? And the answer, by the way, is probably yes. Honestly, if I'm being honest, like, I'm just, part of that is my pacifism. Like, you know, like, I'm not wanting to get involved in any kind of violent way. I will have in-depth discussions about what I believe with the people closest to me and those kind of things. But, like, you know, I'm not signing up to fight. Like, I think that's wrong. So, you know, it's interesting for me to place myself there. And the movie always gives you that, like, that it just, it felt fully realized to me in a way that allowed me to place myself in this universe. And so yeah, I was just compelled throughout. I've talked enough, Andrew. Tell me some of the things that you saw in this.
Oh, I really appreciate the film's ability to not pick sides of liberal or conservative. It toes the line of neutrality by giving us the lens of war photographers, and through their lens, we don't see sides, we see lives. Lives on all fronts, civilians, militia, soldiers, even press, you know. There's this amazing line in the film where a character says, it doesn't matter who they are. They are trying to kill us, so we are trying to kill them. And it says so much about the mentality of this war in general. Absolutely brilliant. And I just want to hark on everything you said about Alex Garland and his visual eye of capturing something that is so real that it hasn't happened yet. It's easy to recreate something that has happened and make it feel authentic. Like you see, I don't know why this, but Saving Private Ryan, you know, a lot of people who were actually on Normandy and stuff said, this is like the most authentic and real thing that we've ever seen portrayed, and that comes across on the screen. But that's something that's already happened in the past. You have people that you can get references from to make it feel more real. This is something from the future that feels so real. And I'm like, who did you talk to get such authentic ideas from?
Yeah.
It's just a really, really well-told story.
Yeah, and it's you also, because you're in a future fantasy that isn't reality, you are also don't have the historical context that you would use with something that has already happened, right? And historical context comes from a lot of different avenues. You know, it's often said the winners are the ones who write history, and there's a lot of truth to that. Like, you know, the idea of you watch something like this and you go, okay, and there are winners and losers in this movie too. Like, that's another thing I appreciated. It's not like the war is so in the background that it's not fully formed. You feel that this is
You're immersed.
Yeah, this is an immersive, fully formed political environment where you understand the Civil War as much as you need to understand what's going on. It's not like a complete, like, Top Gun Maverick situation where it's like the enemy has fifth generation fighters and you never even know who the enemy is or why that matters or, you know, anything like that. It's it's like you understand there are some lines drawn here. You hear some of what those lines are. You understand kind of how the battle has moved, you know, what's going on with the battle. Like, I really felt like I understood exactly enough to get what was going on without the movie being about what was going on. So because of that, you watch it and you go, okay, what will the historical context of this be based on the journalism I'm seeing done now, based on who's winning, based on these things? What are the stories that are going to be told? And will they include all the things that the journalist saw and the journalist shot? And, you know, like, it's just a really interesting way to take a look at how history is defined and how history looks at things. You know, and a lot of that, again, is coming from my very specific views on violence and how violence is always begets more violence and all of that kind of stuff. You know, but it's always interesting for me to watch the justification of war and what that is for each person and what that looks like. And I think this movie does a really good job at giving a broad view of several different ways that people interact with the times when we want to kill each other. And that's, you know, that's what war is. Those are the times we want to kill each other, because if you're not for me, you're against me, and you're a monster. The enemy is always the monster. And so I thought this movie did really well with that stuff.
Yeah. Do you have any cons?
That is a great question, and one that we often talk about on this show. And honestly, as I've thought about the cons in this movie, they just haven't been big enough for me to really care about, because I love the movie so much. However, I will throw a few nitpicks out there, because that's what they are. Any of my cons feel like nitpicks. There are just a few things that distract me from the reality of the moment. There are a few choices that are made that seem really ridiculous to me. One of them is the Kaylee Spaney character's integration into the movie. I found that to be a little unbelievable, but the movie actually gave it a little more context later on that I helped me out a little bit. So even that wasn't terrible. There are those little moments here or there where I just felt, I didn't feel authentically human to me, that choice that was made. In a couple of them, I guess I'm going to give one big example. This is probably the biggest example for me. And it deals with the movie's need for its central character to be the smartest one in the room. There is a moment towards the end, so I won't spoil it, I won't give it away, but there's a big military moment towards the end that for some reason Kirsten Dunst is the only one who figures out. And it's so silly that she's the only one that would think of this, because it is, like, in my opinion, the obvious thing that would be happening. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So I know exactly what you're talking about too. And so I thought the exact same thing. She's not the only one.
No, but the movie needs her to be the smartest person in the room, and it needs her to be the one that goes, but what if? And it's like, yeah, more like, duh, that's of course what happened. But anyhow, so things like that, where it's just like, oh, I see the movie making here. Whatever, but the movie making is working for me, so I don't mind it as much. What about you?
There's a negative that doesn't affect me, but I can see it affecting other people.
Okay.
So, the movie isn't very good about giving us exposition as to why there is a civil war. And if any of this is spoilers, we can cut this out, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there's one going on in the United States. We just don't know why. The movie tries to play it off as the information is not important, but I could see a lot of people thinking that it is very important. The movie makes the point of, as a photographer, as this group of people that we're following, you just take the picture. You don't ask the questions. And you take the picture, and then you, so other people can propose the questions. And I think that's the moral of the story here.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it is very much intentional. I did have the same thought, actually, Andrew, is that we, because we live in a polarized society, a lot of people will enter into something like this going, well, which side is my side supposed to be? You know, am I the dumb side that did this? Am I the cool side that did this? Is that this person that I voted for? Is that who that's supposed to represent? And then, I don't think the movie's at all interested in that. I really don't. Like, it's, I think it's the interested in the opposite. I don't think it's trying to paint a picture of current polarized America and where it might lead. I think it's just trying to paint a picture of something that's happened in country after country after country throughout the history of time, which is the idea of polarization and the idea of, you know, where war comes from. There are echoes of our current environment, because there would have to be.
But you have to pull from something.
Yeah, but it's not. I think you're right. I don't think that's this movie's desire to paint a clear picture of, you know, how this started, where it came from, who the good guys are, who the bad guys are. Like, that's just not... Now, what it's interested in, is, can we take a look at ourselves and go, how does this happen? How do we get to places like this? You know, is there anything that makes, you know, this okay? Or what would that be for you? Or, you know, I think it has something very clear to say on despotism. You know, it has something very clear to say on the idea of autocracy and those kind of things. But I don't think those things are painted as clearly to give some sense of, like, righteous ending to the movie. I just don't think that's what this movie is about.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. Can we talk about some of the specifics? Did you love Kirsten Dunst in this as much as I did? I thought she was so good.
Yeah, she was amazing. There, towards the end of the movie, and this is not her, this is the writing of mm-hmm. the script. She's portrayed, if this is spoiler again, I'm sorry. She's portrayed very stoically and head on her shoulders, like this is old hat to her. She's been in the stuff before, so she's used to it. Towards the end of the movie, there's a character shift that wasn't given really much explanation that I was confused by, but it was quickly rectified. So, but whenever you asked me about Kirsten Dunst's performance, that's the first thing that popped into my head.
I know what you're talking about. I think it is the central character development of the movie is her change. And I think you may be right that it's a little bit too abstract and a little bit too cloudy. But I did understand it. I never felt like I didn't understand it. But because it's kind of the central point that I think the movie is trying to make about her character, she is taking an opposite character arc than you might usually see. But I think we are supposed to, through her, understand that to be shut off from the reality, the emotion, those kind of things of what's going on in front of you, especially in a war situation or a warlike situation, that for her growth was finding a way to become in touch with her humanity again. To become a fully formed human being by the end, to where she found a way, a very specific avenue through which to locate her humanity and make a very human choice. And I think that's what this movie is about, and about the cycle of youth to age. And I think a lot of it has to do with, we are seeing in the Kaylee Spaney character, her reflection as a young person, right? And so there is a real idea of the cycle of humanity and, you know, the how youth interacts with things versus how age interacts with things. And that's a generalization, but it's a generalization for a reason. And I think the movie understands the humanity of that. So it worked for me, but I think you're right. I think it's a little under, the change is a little underdeveloped and feels more sudden than it should. But it did work for me. And okay. I think I will just say the transitions we're given are there in the movie. It's just that her personality is still so hard on the outside that those changes are happening internally through these different events. I'll just say cleaning out the vehicle was a big one. There's a really big processing that's going on with a vehicle cleaning in this movie that I think is one of those moments where we are supposed to recognize that the walls are coming down, you know, and that there's a reattachment to what it means to be human that she's experiencing. So yeah, and I think those do happen throughout. I just think her stoic exterior makes the changes at the end feel a little more sudden.
And I love how she plays off of Wagnamora.
They're great together. Yeah, and the movie isn't afraid to let all of them actually not be 100% great people. Like, they're all making bad choices every once in a while. Like, you know, it's maybe the Stephen McKinley character is our saint, if there is one. But, yeah. You know, but yeah, everybody else, especially Wagnamora, is, you know, as a flawed human doing some flawed things in this movie.
So. Yeah. I know we're probably wanting to move on to the next movie, but I want to propose a question to you.
Sure,
real quick.
Do it.
So, do you think that some people can come away from this movie thinking that war photographers are cold people for the simple fact that they aren't participating, like helping? Like, if somebody gets wounded, they don't, you know, help at all. They just take the picture and then they move on. That it can come across as a cold, heartless profession. I don't agree with that, but I heard somebody saying it in the movie theater.
Oh, absolutely. In the same way that there are parts of your humanity you have to turn off if you're a criminal defense attorney or something like that, like, because that part of you is not your job, right? Like, you know, if that was your vocation or your desire, you'd be in the Red Cross or Global Aid or something like that. Your desire is to capture reality and not impact it. You're trying as hard as you can to please Mr. Schrodinger, you know, and not actually impact the things that you're there to view or watch or capture. So yes, I think the movie can make it appear as if photojournalists are cold people. And I think there's probably an element of truth to having to turn that part of your humanity down while you work, at least. So, yeah.
Because I went to see this with MJ Roper, who is a friend of the show. Mm-hmm. He's been on several times. Shout out to Altera Media. The person behind us at the end of the movie said, whenever there was somebody that got shot and they were just taking pictures, they said, I don't think that I could just sit there and take pictures. I would have to help. And as we were driving home, we had a little, it just sparked a conversation in us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I heard them say that too. They were sitting right next to me.
Were they really?
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't know you were in the same theater as us.
I think you guys were right in front of me. I think you were right.
The 410.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. We should have said hi. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So I agree that there is, you know, yourself, like, then don't be a photojournalist, because, you know, like, there's just some things you have to do. I think war is one of those triage situations naturally, right? Like, the idea of how do I do the most good? How do I do the most help? Is a really tough thing to understand, and allows you to blame yourself for a lot of things that, you know, maybe you could have done something Maybe you couldn't have. Maybe you would have made it worse. I don't know. But what I do know is for these people, which again, I'm not built like this, but for these people, that's just their goal, their job. That's how they're made. They want to capture what they see as the truth. You know, this is the video. This is the picture. This is the quote. This is what happened. This is the news. This is reality. And I think there's a really beautiful, important place for that in the world. So, yeah, but I couldn't do it for sure.
No, not at all. You got one last thing?
No, I think I pretty much said everything I wanted to say. Nice. I'm excited about this movie. I, you know, like I said, I love movies that think big and swing big, and this is definitely one of them.
You think you can see it again?
Yeah. I don't think this movie would be hard to watch again. I actually think it's strangely rewatchable, and I think I will pick up more the next time I watch it. Mm. Yes, there are some hard moments in the movie. There really are, but not in a way that I'll just take what I have and be fine. If there's an opportunity to watch this movie again, I will take it.
So. It's not The Road.
Right. Yes, or something like that. Yeah. What about you?
Jesse Plemons is so good. Oh, yeah. Man. We talk about tense scenes. We talk about the coin toss, you know, in No Country for Old Men, or going to the house in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
This scene might be in that contention for like most tense scenes.
It's really good. Yeah.
And no post-credit scene.
Post-credit scene. Well, there is a little bit of during credits artistic interpretation, but mm-hmm. but yeah, no post-credit scene. That is Civil War. It is in theaters now. I do recommend you check it out. Would love to hear your thoughts on it. All right, let's move on to our next review. Let's talk a little bit about Monkey Man.
To them, we're animals.
Both of us. We're broken.
If a man wishes to challenge the gods, he must become more than a man. He must become a beast.
Kid, an anonymous young man who ekes out a meager living in an underground fight club where night after night wearing a gorilla mask, he is beaten bloody by more popular fighters for cash. After years of suppressed rage, Kid discovers a way to infiltrate the enclave of the city's sinister elite. As his childhood trauma boils over, his mysteriously scarred hands unleash an explosive campaign of retribution to settle the score with the men who took everything from him. Monkey Man is Dev Patel's, as mentioned, directorial debut. It is a movie that he poured his own blood, sweat, and tears into get made. He wanted to make sure that this movie would happen, and congratulations, Dev, the movie did happen, but the question still remains, Mr. Ormsby, did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
He also, this is his writing debut as well.
Correct, yeah, written and directed by.
Low side of okay, teetering into didn't like it.
We are in exactly the same place. Yeah, there's enough talent and promise here that I don't think I can say didn't like it. I think I have to land on the low side of just okay on this one. But I found myself disinterested a lot of the time during this movie, which is
got not issues.
It's not the kind of movie you're supposed to be disinterested in throughout. So, but start us off on a positive note, Andrew. What are some of the things you liked about it?
Well, as far as non-combat sequences go, this film has some amazing moments of spectacular cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Dev Patel has an eye for great cinematic, like picturesque pieces, and I see a lot of potential. And maybe that's why I can't say I didn't like it, is because I'm watching this movie and I'm like, he's you know, just shaking off some cobwebs. He's still learning, you know, he's gonna pick it up, and I'm excited for his next venture. Mm-hmm. But this one doesn't do it for me.
Yeah. I very similar. My positives are in two categories. They are in the visual area. I think the way that some of these scenes are shot, framed, brought to us are creative, interesting, and impressive. And I think Dev has a great eye, and I think he knew what he wanted and went after it. The other category is Dev Patel himself, who I just love everything he does. Like, as an actor, I just love him. I just think there's something very compelling and charismatic about him as a person. I know he's been wanting to play a role like this and just hasn't been able to find it. And so he just made it for himself. And I think you can see why he wanted to show this side of himself. He wanted to show that, you know, he could do something like this. And he can. He's really, really impressive in this movie, in my opinion. I don't think his acting is the issue. I don't think that the filmmaking is the issue. I think the storytelling is the issue here.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that might indicate possibly that Dev might want to make someone else's script. You know, I'm not saying he can't write a great movie. I'm just saying in this case, I don't think he did write a great movie. And that's, you know, people grow, people do better things. I would love to see him give it another shot and maybe, but like, there are some really key, in my opinion, problems with this screenplay and the way that it progresses and the way that it muddles, I feel, a lot of its themes and a lot of what it's trying to do in favor of a violence orgy. Like, it just, it's more interested in trying to, this is again my opinion, more interested in trying to be John Wick than it is in actually, you know, finding a way to tell the story cohesively. So that I can find my way into it and understand what's going on. So some thoughts from you, Andrew.
The film's plot is very simple, as you stated, but for some reason they insisted on making it more complicated than it needed to be.
Yeah.
I heard in an interview from Jordan Peele, who produced this movie, by the way, saying that what he enjoyed most about producing this film is the story. I'm going to make sure I get this right. What he enjoyed most about producing this film is that the story goes from a character's perspective of being a revenger, to an avenger, that the character realizes that revenge isn't enough and that he needs to fight for the people as well. I did not get that at all from this film.
This is what I'm telling you about the muddled messages. This is exactly what I'm telling you. This is a revenge movie. This movie screams the revenge part. The avenge part is there, but those notes are played so lightly and so sparsely that you just, they just never came together for me. I would have loved the idea of foregoing revenge to avenge is
sounds noble.
No, it's wonderful. Like, it's, I mean, you know, again, it's violence either way, so I'm anti.
Sure.
But I like the mental shift from doing for myself to doing for others. Like, that's really appealing to me. That stuff is here, but it is so lightly sung that you can't even hear it in the melody, in the harmony. It feels like it is a revenge movie through and through. Like, if you just watch this movie, it was okay. Here is the revenge he's trying to get. Here's how he's going to get it. He got it. Like, there isn't a, like, I didn't feel the real shift of, in fact, if I can be honest, the fight for others, that some of the moments that are supposed to be bringing us that theme come off the opposite. They come off as using others to help you get what you want. Like, it comes off as like
exploitative.
Not exactly exploitative. That's a little bit too far. But the idea of, because it's not manipulative. It is something that is, something they do on their own, but it feels in service of his thing, not like he's being in service of their thing, right?
Like opportunistic?
Yes, that's probably a better word. And that's just a big miss. And I think it's one of the reasons everything feels so muddled is because it never feels like it's not about him. It feels like it's about him the entire time. And that, a lot of movies are like that. You know, nobody's like that. John Wick's like that. We have a ton of these movies these days, you know, like, But it just, if this movie wanted to be that, and I think it did, I just think it completely missed. I just think it's a swing and a miss on that regard.
Yeah. And too much shaky cam.
Well, you're not going to get an argument from me there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost as if he wanted to make a Western, but he thought that the idea of, like, the concept of a Western was a good idea, but he wanted to make it more complicated. And yeah, it just doesn't work. It's really unfortunate. But there's promise here. I want to reiterate that I think that Dev Patel has some directorial abilities. Like, he has a visual eye that I'm really impressed by, and I want to see more of.
I agree. I can't quit thinking about those themes, though, so I'm gonna say one more thing about those, and then I promise I won't bring it up again. If this movie truly wanted to be about shifting from revenge to avenge, then Dev Patel's character should have had a choice at the end where he sacrificed his own personal revenge for the greater good for people who needed him. Like, that's the choice you give that character. But this movie didn't want to do that because this movie wants that revenge, right? It's not willing to sacrifice that to have that moment to really land the point that it thinks it's trying to make. But if that's the movie you want to make, you have to do something like that. You have to show us his change in that regard because he seems single-minded the entire movie. Like, he didn't seem like he had any any change. Even I mentioned the dog early on. Even the dog is one of those things like, well, is he feeding the dog because it's going to, you know, get him something later on? Or is that just a accidental benefit? Or, like, you know, it's that, but with people. Like, it's the same thing. It's just like, you know, you're being quote unquote nice, or, you know, or seeing the needs of those who are downtrodden, whether it's the dog or people or whatever. And that benefits you in the end, but why and how, and was that the point? Like, shouldn't have been you trying to benefit them? I don't know. It's very strange to me. And granted, his ultimate revenge does apparently help the downtrodden. And that's a very convenient way to kind of keep both. It just doesn't teach us much about him as a character. So there, that's it. That's my main point with this movie. And I just had a lot to say about it. So I wanted to get all that out.
Well, my one last thing is, there are so many moments in this movie where I was asking myself, what is the point of this? For example, what was the point of him bleaching the monkey mask?
I mean, it's a fair question. I think there's probably an artistic point. Remind me, when did he do it? Before his last matches?
After
his last matches. Then the movie thinks that this is one of those signs of that change. I think that the monkey used to be about darkness and revenge, and now the monkey is about lightness and becoming a superhero and, you know, fighting for the weak. The problem is the actual actions aren't speaking to that. So, like, the metaphor doesn't land. You wonder what that's all about. I didn't even notice it because it doesn't seem connected to anything real. It doesn't seem connected to any choices that he's making. It's just this, the superhero costume changes now because I've changed who I am. Have you? It looks like you're pursuing the exact same people and with the exact same violence. And, like, it's one of those.
Yeah.
So...
My one last thing
is, this movie also makes the mistake of really misunderstanding the pacing that's needed in a movie like this.
Yes. I
think this movie has multiple personalities when it comes to its pacing. And yes, a movie should have ups and downs like a roller coaster. It should, you know, you should move from one to another and feel like, okay, we're gaining our energy here for the next moment. Okay, we're in the next momentum. The problem is, with a movie like this, it doesn't just shift what we're doing. It shifts the way we're doing it. So it's not just that it feels slow and then fast and then slow and then fast. It also, the slow feels differently toned than the fast. Like, it feels like there's a whole different thing going on when the movie is doing its, up-tempo action stuff, as opposed to when it's doing its more quote unquote thoughtful stuff. And so it just feels, for me, like there's just so much space in between the things the movie wants to do, where it's doing things it feels like it has to do. So yeah, I wanted to mention that as well. I feel like all those two main things I've said can come across as me almost sounding like I hate this movie. I want to make it very clear. I think this movie is way too well done to land anywhere near there for me. That's why I'm going with just okay. I think this movie's okay. I just think it's fighting with itself in many ways. So, yeah. There you go. That is Monkey Man, Dev Patel, bringing it to us. And I really do hope he makes more stuff.
Me too.
Maybe try somebody else's script once, see how that goes. Because, I think he's definitely very talented, but I thought the story here was not very good. All right, well, that will bring us then to our best ever challenge. But before we get there, thank you to our SIFPOP members. Thank you for going to patreon.com/SIFPOP and for supporting. We really do appreciate that. Helps out with the website, SIFPOP.com. Helps out with the podcast. Really appreciate everything you do. You can check all that out at Patreon. Patreon.com/SIFPOP.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money
at Menards. Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
All right. Best ever challenge. Best ever directorial debuts of the last 5 years. So in the last 5 years, these are movies that a first-time director has made. We'll go number 5 to number 1. Of course, if we have it higher, Trump! We'll make sure and trump it. I imagine there may be some Trumps here, but we can check it out. There's actually a lot of good choices, Andrew. There's a lot of good choices.
As I was making this list, I like got all the way down to number 5, and I'm like, this could be somebody's number 1. This is such a stacked category, and it makes me so excited for the possibilities that the future has for new directors, because if this is the quality of stuff that new directors are giving us, it speaks so highly of like what could possibly be on the horizon.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Lots of good stuff. Why don't you kick us off? What's your number 5?
The directors are Danny and Mike Philippou, and it is Talk to Me.
Mm-hmm. Good choice. Good choice.
Yes. It was such an amazing horror film. And I don't even like horror films, but there were so many different messages and more moral quandaries in this film that made it so much more than just a horror film. It raised questions. And to this day, I think that I can find new and exciting, theories about this world that they've created here. I really hope that not only do they make more movies, I would actually be interested in seeing a Talk to Me too.
Yeah, be very interested in seeing what they would do with the sequel as well. Definitely in my honorable mentions. I think this is a great choice. Nice. My number 5 comes to us from Josh Cooley, whose directorial debut was Toy Story 4. The Toy Story movies are all amazing, and 4 is no different. And Pixar has a great history of giving directors their first shot and then making great films. And Josh Cooley is no different. So I wanted to bring Toy Story 4 to the front. It's almost hard for me to look at the 4 Toy Story movies and do any kind of ranking with them, because they all just feel so good to me.
Sure.
I always end up putting Toy Story 1 first, just because it's Toy Story and it was the first. But man, 2 is great, and 3 is great, and 4 is great as well. So yeah, that's my number 5.
Nice.
What's your number 4, Andrew?
My number 4 is just as happy and exciting and full of frolicking as Toy Story is.
Good.
That would be Fran Kranz's Mass.
Trap!
Yep.
That makes me happy.
I've got that fun, lighthearted romp up a little bit higher. My number 4 is from just this past year. My number 4 is from Celine Song. I have Past Lives at number 4. We've talked about this movie. We talked about it recently. I am more and more impressed every time I see it. I think I've seen it 4 times now, and I'm just so impressed with what she does with this story. And it just feels so fresh, such a fresh take on modern romance, and such a fresh take on the idea of, what love is and what it looks like at different stages in our life, and the decisions we make inside and outside of those different kinds of love and those past loves and those kind of things. It's really, really well done. One of the best movie endings of the year too. So Past Lives is my number 4.
Very nice.
Number 3, Mr. Ormsby.
Going to go with Lin-Manuel Miranda and Tick, Tick, Boom.
Trap!
Well, I know what your top 2 are.
My number 3 is Mass. Fran Kranz, Mass. What an incredible debut. I mean, just powerful stuff. A lot of it comes down to the powerhouse cast, just doing amazing, Broadway-like work. You know, like this is... an incredible stage play, as much as it is an incredible movie. And man, it is powerful and hard and difficult, and one of those rare movies that can actually maybe give you some insight into your own view on a topic you maybe thought you knew how you felt about, and that's saying something. So yeah, what do you have to say about Mass? I know you had it at number 4.
Echo. And then if it wasn't for the performances in this movie, it could come across as a cringe fest, but they sell it so well.
Yeah.
The authenticity in the performances. And I'm a sucker for a single location film where they just stick with one set piece, kind of like Locke or others.
Yeah.
But man, it's just such a powerful movie. And yes, absolutely. It makes you question where you stand on this topic, which this is a movie. I don't know if I would, you would have to know who to recommend it to, but I would also at the same time not tell them anything about it before going in.
Yeah. It reveals itself nicely if you don't know anything about what they're talking about. It's also one of those movies where it has a title that hits you, a week later, and you're like
5 different ways.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a perfect title.
Yeah.
All right. On to our number 2s. What do you got?
Max Barbacow and Palm Springs.
Yeah. I had that in my honorable mentions. Yeah.
Love this movie so much. It is so good. Oh man. It's just, everybody is on their A game, and it's such a fun, unique take on, spoilerish, it's the same day over and over again. It's the Groundhog Day effect. But it's done differently. And how it's done differently is it's not one single individual who's stuck in the time loop. It's multiple people who are stuck in the time loop and how they interact with each other, because they are now kings of their own destiny, mm-hmm. pretty much, and how they choose to deal with that. And oh, some of the story arcs and some of the twists that happen are just perfect. I absolutely adore Palm Springs.
Yeah, so. I do too. It was definitely high in my honorable mention list. So I'm glad you had it up there at number two. It's just such a great and fun movie. It's so good. On to my number two. You've already mentioned it. My number two is Tick, Tick, Boom, Lin-Manuel Miranda's directorial debut. And Andrew Garfield just absolutely destroying me with that performance. He's so good in this movie. Doing things I never knew he had in him. I love the story. I love the through lines. I love the choices that are made in the staging, in the way the musical numbers are brought to us. There's just some really unique, fresh musical choices made in this movie that pay tribute to the source material in many ways as well. Just incredible stuff. I could watch Tick, Tick, Boom on a loop for probably 3 years before I would tire. And it may not even happen then. It's just such a good watch.
Oh, yeah. And Jonathan Larson is such a fascinating character, mm-hmm. too. Or an individual, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a docudrama about his life. Or not even about his life. It's about a moment in his life. And that's the kind of docudramas that I really get behind. Like Lincoln, for example.
Mm-hmm.
These ones that focus on a character defining moment,
mm-hmm.
like how we know them as the audience. This is how this came to fruition. It is right. told beautifully. I want to also give a shout out to Robin De Jesus, who plays Michael in this. Mm-hmm. Oh man. Like what a powerful performance. It brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah. It's so, so good. That is Tick, Tick, Boom in at number two for me. Time for our number ones. We might have the same one. Neither one of us have heard the other person say our number one. So, Andrew, you go first. What do you got?
Is it Regina King?
It is Regina King.
One Night in Miami.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I'll let you go first.
Okay. I'll go first. Wow. Wow. That's all we need to say. I've spoken about my love for this film. I think, again, you're dealing with something like Mass where you have these central performances that are just so, so good. It is, even though it's not technically a, you know, one place kind of movie, it kind of feels like one because it's really just conversations with these four men and the concept, the idea of these four individuals in this movement having these conversations together is so enlightening. It is so beautiful. It is so well done. This movie blows my mind. I love One Night in Miami.
Yeah, I love One Night in Miami. I love Kingsley Benadire, Ellie Gree, Aldous Hodge, and Leslie Odom Jr. I love Regina King. I love Kim Powers. I love everything about this movie.
I love my mom. I love my dad.
Oh, man. I want to talk about the very first scene in this movie with Beau Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And how it just sets the tone for the entire film. And it's the only scene he's in, but it speaks so much volume that it... And everybody's cast perfectly, especially Ellie Gree, who plays Cassius Clay. I can't remember in the movie now if he was Cassius Clay at the time or if he was Muhammad Ali.
Mm.
I don't know if he changed his name.
At that point.
I want to be respectful. You know.
I think at that point in this movie, in the fictional world of this movie, he was still Cassius Clay. Okay. But was on the verge. I think a lot of what he's talking about is that transition. So,
gotcha. Yeah,
if I remember correctly.
Either way, the point I'm trying to make is he is cast perfectly. I think he did a better Cassius Muhammad Ali than Will Smith did. It's just perfect.
Yeah, he's really, really good in this. Great. Co number one, One Night in Miami. Number one, Night in Miami. All right. Before we talk about our honorable mentions, what did the gurus have to say? I'm curious what their top were.
Yeah, one that was not mentioned by anybody, and it's a movie I haven't seen yet. And since everybody talked about it, it's jumped up on my list. After Sun, which I'd never heard of. Then Palm Springs was at number two. And number one, Past Lives.
After Sun is the Paul Mescal movie, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah, Charlotte Wells directed this one. Yeah, I didn't like this one as much as a lot of people did. I get what people see in it, though. But yeah, so that one just kind of slipped my mind. But that was their number one.
Oh, that was number three.
After Sun was number three. Palm Springs was number two. And number one was?
Past Lives.
Past Lives. Makes a lot of sense. Yep. Honorable mentions. Why don't you go first, Andrew?
And I'll just mark them off. I didn't have any.
Oh, okay. I'll just throw some out then. Yeah. Olivia Wilde, Booksmart, was almost exactly 5 years ago. I think that's worth mentioning. Emma Seligman, Shiva Baby, is a great directorial debut worth watching. Maggie Gyllenhaal's directorial debut, The Lost Daughter, is definitely worth checking out.
Oh, the Olivia Colman movie?
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. That's cool.
That was Maggie Gyllenhaal's first directing gig. The Mitchells versus the Machines, probably worth mentioning.
Yes.
Mike Rionda. And then a couple more recent Pixar's. Enrico Casarosa directed Luca, which I think is a fantastic film. And Domi Shih directed Turning Red, which I also think is well worth a watch. So, again, Pixar continuing that tradition of giving directors pretty amazing first films to take a look at. So there you go. Those are the best ever directorial debuts in the last 5 years. All right, well, let's finish up with some buried treasure. Andrew, what's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about?
Roadhouse.
This is the one on Prime, right?
No, the original one.
Oh, the original
one. Which is also on Prime. No, honestly, it's both of them. It's okay. Both of them. I'm cheating. Because I'd never seen the original Roadhouse before.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, well, if I'm going to see the new one with Jake Gyllenhaal and Conor McGregor, then I should probably see the original one. Oh, I had so much fun.
It's such a crazy movie.
It's so crazy, but if you just give yourself to it and just let yourself enjoy the madness, you can have such a wild time.
Uh-huh. Yes. Never has someone so easily ripped someone else's throat right out of their neck.
Hey, man. Patrick Swayze has that death grip.
That's right. Patrick Squeezy.
Patrick Squeezy, yeah. And the new one. It's totally different vibe, but I was here for it. It was really fun. It's a lot grittier, but there's, I think, a lot more humor in it than I was expecting there to be.
I love Jake Gyllenhaal in this new Roadhouse. I think he's so good in it. He makes it for me. Yeah, he makes it for me. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
What do you think of Conor McGregor?
I think he's okay because he's in this movie. I don't know if what he's doing would work in any other movie, but it kind of works. It kind of works in this movie.
I think it works.
Yeah. I begrudge no one thinking it doesn't. I totally get, like, you know, if your needle's pointing just slightly, you know, one way or the other, this performance, you may hate it or love it. I actually thought it worked for me. So, yeah.
There's a post-credit scene, everybody, so stick around for it.
There you go. I'm going to Netflix for my buried treasure and want to talk about Ripley on Netflix. This is, of course, the Patricia Highsmith novel, The Talented Mr. Ripley. And, of course, there was a Matt Damon, Jude Law movie back in the day. And this is Andrew Scott taking over the role. Ooh. And it is an extended mini series telling of this story. I will say I prefer the original movie. I think the original movie is still better. And I think one of the reasons I prefer the original movie is because that feels like the right amount of time to tell the parts of this story that I need to know. And it feels like the pacing and the momentum feels right to me. Now, is that just because that's the way I saw it first? Maybe. I don't know. That's hard to say. But watching this one, I got bored quite a bit. So it should say something. It should say something that I'm still bringing it to you as a buried treasure because it is that beautiful of a show to watch. It is absolutely gorgeous. This is an every frame of painting kind of experience. It is in black and white, and I'm not sure I'm fully on board that this needed to be in black and white, but I understand what they're doing here. They're trying to make this feel like an old gothic Hitchcockian kind of, you know, mystery thing that they're going for here. Actually, the it's Steve Zalian, who did this, directed every episode, and said that the copy of the book he had had a beautiful black and white photograph for the cover art, and he was like, I'm gonna do it all in black and light. I'm like, that's not a good enough reason, but it's still but not my choice.
Try and again.
But it's still really, really, really beautiful. And here's the other part. Andrew Scott is a genius. I love watching this man act. And he's in almost every second of this thing. So it's fun,
like,
watching him do
this. The sky is blue.
Right, exactly. And then the one other reason that this is still definitely a buried treasure recommendation is... it has two murder scenes in this miniseries, and if you've seen the movie, you know which murders they are, that are extended in a way that is just, it's masterful. They are masterfully told as stories. Each of these murders are their own stories with their own tension, their own ups and downs, their own climaxes, their, you know, all that kind of stuff. So just absolute set piece miracles, these two murders are. And that's enough for me to make sure this is a recommend. Even though, like I said, I was bored through a lot of it. I really was. I wish it had been shorter. But I really did love Andrew Scott. So there is that. So that is Ripley on Netflix and Roadhouse, either version, both of which are on Amazon Prime. Well, we did it, Andrew. We did a podcast.
Woo! Yeah, we did.
Congratulations to us for
proud of you
making podcasting happen. Honestly, really, we are the heroes. Thank you so much for joining us today for this heroic endeavor. SifPop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And much love and gratitude to our SifPop members for giving monthly to make SifPop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. You can check out all the fun over at patreon.com/SifPop. There are other ways you can interact with the podcast. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review wherever you listen, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever. If you want to email us, you can do that. Emails do still exist. Feedback@SifPop.com if you want to send it that way. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show, too. So let them know about it and that listening is much easier than using a standard serving tray to de-thumb someone. We will be back next week with more movie discussion. And again, check out SifPop.com to make your summer sum picks. And we will see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Save big money now on new siding from LP SmartSide at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP SmartSide today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.